I do want to talk about the fact that you have published 13 novels. So then this is marketed as a US debut.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such a joy. You know, I've been wanting to, you know, sell a book, as it were, into the States for forever. And it's just been so exciting that this was the one, and particularly this book that felt such a personal, I suppose, half cry for help, half look at my own life. It just felt really special that this was the one that, you know, got editors sitting up and taking notice.
Hey there, Book Gang. Are you ready for a mind-bending time travel discussion? Today's guest is none other than award-nominated UK novelist and screenwriter Cheska Major. We'll be delving into one of the trickiest kinds of time travel stories to write. That is the Groundhog Day story. In her US debut novel, Maybe Next Time, Emma finds herself trapped in a never-ending Monday, trying to save her husband and keep her life from falling apart. I'll save the full description for Cheska in our main show, but this novel encompasses everything from the ways our marriages evolve, told through symbolic letters, and a never-ending cycle of both new leases on life and death. For readers that love a bookish theme, you're in for a treat. Cheska weaves in insightful commentary on Emma's demanding role as a literary agent and the authors that she's juggling. As new authors make increasing demands on her time, tiny bits of the literary world spill into pages. These sections are quite juicy about the experience with writers, reviewers, and agents. This novel truly is sitting now on my all-time favorite time travel story shelf. I authentically mean that. And I'm so excited to talk about time travel stories with Cheska. We're going to get a couple of her favorites, and to support today's discussion, I have a bonus post that shares all of my own favorite time travel stories with you, with some really amazing under-the-radar selections, along with some well-known classics. If you're new here, welcome. I'm Amy Ellen Clark from MomAdvice.com. I am the voice behind the Book Gang podcast. On this podcast, we celebrate under-the-radar books, backlist book selections, and debut novelists. Before we jump into today's topic, this is your reminder that we will be discussing A Quiet Life for the Mom Advice Book Club on Facebook. This chat will be happening on March 31st at 8 p.m. In A Quiet Life, you'll find three interconnected stories that revolve around characters facing loss, but ultimately discovering themselves and each other in their winter seasons of life. If you want to order a copy of A Quiet Life, please support our indie bookseller, Fables Books. If you're local, they have a new Mom Advice Book Club display in their Goshen, Indiana shop. Remember, if you're a Patreon pal, you get a 15% off coupon code on any 2023 book club book that you can apply in person or to any online order. Patrons also get access to an exclusive hour with the author, Ethan Joella, discussing his writing process, and a gorgeous little music playlist with winter hymns that match this beautiful book. As I wrap up, I just want to express my gratitude for our supporters on Patreon. Thank you. You pay for this stuff. You pay for the investment in sound equipment, hosting services. My aim really is to reach 300 patrons this year so that I can actually cover all of my expenses to host these conversations. You can help us keep the lights on and keep our episodes commercial free by contributing just $5 a month or signing up for an annual membership at a 10% discount. Instead of buying a latte, why not support a creator? Join by heading to patreon.com/momadvice. That's patreon.com/momadvice. Or you can check today's show notes for more details. Plus, when you join, you'll gain access to our extensive collection of nearly 200 bookish bonuses, including our new 40-page reading guide for March and podcasts with reviews on the latest book releases, including, get this, summer sneak peeks. Yeah, I'm not going to hold them back for a big summer guide. You will get them in real time with at Get Booked with Larry from Instagram. And if you love our show, we would be so, so grateful if you told a friend, gave us a like, left a review. If you include your Bookstagram or BookTok handle, we might even give you a shout out on the show notes. Now, let's meet my new favorite time travel writer, Cheska Major. Tasca, I'm so excited to talk about your book. I received it from your publicist and I told her, well, I'll get back to you and let you know if we're able to squeeze Tasca in for an interview. And I devoured this book. I read it in 24 hours, could not put it down, talked through all of the Groundhog Day stories with my husband on a walk. I just thought you did this so well. And something I want to admit as a reader is two things usually don't work for me that ended up working really well in your book. And one of them is that I don't really like Groundhog Day stories in general. I usually fade out. I think it might be because I have a little bit of ADHD, and so I can only handle it one time. But the way that you kept introducing the story kept me engaged as a reader. And the other thing that typically doesn't work for me are letters. And this has a beautifully built letter sequence. I could not put it down. And for a new reader, I would love for you to set us up on what this book is all about.
So thank you so much for all of that. And I'm with you that Groundhog Days are often really tricky to do. This book is about Emma, a very busy, stressed literary agent and mother. She is a friend. She is a colleague. She is a partner. She is a committee member. She is all the hats that these women of a certain age wear. And this day is her normal working Monday. It's an incredibly stressful day as ever, as is every Monday. Her phone is pinging. Her clients are being difficult. Everyone wants a piece of her. And at the end of the day, this horrific event happens to her. Her husband dies and she wakes up the next morning and he's there again. And it's Monday again. And suddenly it becomes her new mission now to realize what is going on, what is happening, why am I reliving this day? Why is this happening to him? And can I stop it, more importantly? And so starts the story.
It's brilliantly done. I understand that the pandemic was a season where, you know, you quote said, you were gripped with desire to look more closely at your own life and how you were living it. What was it about that season that helped you hatch this book idea?
Yeah, there's no doubt this was born from, I'm a mother of very young children myself. So at the moment, they're 6, 4, and 4. But in obviously 2020, they were 18 months. I had twins that were 18 months and a boy who was 3. And obviously, we were locked down in a house. And I had a husband who was out of the house because he was a vet. And I was had a deadline. It was just an enormously, as it was for many people, very stressful time. But it was more than that, that I realized as my world got smaller that I was really grateful to be, there's a line in the book that says, if I was going to be locked inside a house, then I'm glad it was with you. And I think that really rung true for me with my husband, because when he was there, you know, it was joyful and very intimate and lots of in jokes and lots of family time. And we couldn't do a great deal apart from spend time with each other. And I think it really struck a chord with me that as busy and as fun and as much as I enjoyed my life, I perhaps wasn't engaging with perhaps the people that I love the most. And this, I think, definitely, you know, was spilled into wanting to write this book.
Well, I think that a lot of us can relate to that as we weathered that. It's been interesting talking to writers. Some people felt uninspired during this time. Sometimes they just had deadlines that they had to meet during that season, which is really difficult as a writer. And then there are other people that we have gotten to witness have had a special, like, magical thing happen during the season, because your writing process had to look different, I'm sure, during this season.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I was writing by night. So obviously in the day, completely with the children. But again, as stressful as that was, it focuses you. You clearly want to be at your desk. You need to be writing something that matters to you. And strangely, you know, squeezing those times became, you know, it was a joy to get to the desk. And I'm very lucky. I have a writing shed and I was in my garden, my writing shed, and it did feel like, you know, a workplace and a sanctuary. So it was actually, yeah, for me, the writing was a definite release and a definite sort of break from the monotony of that time.
I love hearing that you have a writing shed. I have a she shed. Yes, they are so nice. I feel like you get away, but you don't have to leave your home. You get to wear whatever's comfortable. You can drink whatever you like from your own coffee pot or teapot. So I am 1,000% with you on the shed situation being a wonderful thing during the pandemic, particularly.
Well, I need to give you my top tip, which is a heated coaster is my new thing. Oh my goodness. It sits by my laptop. And you know what it's like when you get involved in a project and you sip your tea and it's gone cold, or your coffee and it's gone cold. This, it just keeps, it maintains the temperature of your drink.
I love it. We actually had an electrician out to put a heater out in my shed because that's how serious I am about my she shed time. I live in Indiana. It gets really, really cold here. And so anytime I'm out there, I'm like, I'm so happy. I feel like I'm somewhere else. And I'm sure that has to be like the perfect creative place for you.
No, it truly is. Yeah.
Well, we are given glimpses into Emma and Dan's relationship through this letter sequence that I was talking about earlier. Why did you think that offered a good anchor for your reader about their relationship? And how did you end up crafting these? What did that look like for you as a writer?
So, of course, you know, with a book that dealt with such a traumatic experience and a traumatic day to continue to live through, this book was obviously in desperate need of light and joy. And I hugely enjoy sort of writing comedy as well. And I knew that the reader would want the light and the dark. And I also knew that you wouldn't care about this husband if you didn't invest in them as a couple. So the letters were absolutely crucial to getting the reader to really root for Emma and in her desperate attempt to save Dan. And actually the book opens with the way they met, and I charted it through every year they married, and you could see it was also a real relationship, and that was important. You know, it was flawed, it had its real low points, it wasn't this sort of honeyed version of a relationship that we see. It was a proper married love, long-term love, how that changes, how that twists, how some people pull away and other people, you know, and all of that. And that felt really important as well, that it felt like a believable relationship. And then from a practical point of view, I actually tended to write them in a separate document and then look at places where it would be important to have a letter and popped one in. So there are a couple of moments where obviously I wanted to create a feeling of there's a surprise in the book. And I definitely knew that I wanted to sort of seed in, a secret and then slam a letter there so that as a reader, you're like, oh, I'm going to have to read this to get to the answer to the, you know. So obviously that's sort of from, I write thriller books as well. And that's, you know, a trick, obviously, that you use a lot in crime to continue to get that reader to turn that page. And I was really using those letters like that as well.
Well, what I loved the most, I think, watching that evolution, you know, you talk about married love and there are like the lows that happen after the kids are in the world and like the, you know, nostalgia from the early days. But also like one thing that I really appreciated within that relationship was when Dan was appreciating certain things about Emma. Let's say Emma can strike up a conversation with anyone. And so this is something that he found incredibly endearing about her when they initially get started in the relationship. But then at the, you know, towards the middle and the end, we see that that has lost its charm for him as a husband. Like, he's like, why do you invest in all of these other people and not us? Which was really a beautiful touch, because I think that those kinds of qualities that we are growing to like love in each other at the beginning can sometimes be the thing that's the hang up later in the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely that. Yeah, exactly. I love that. The lost its charm. But no, exactly that, that it was a relationship that I wanted to chart. All the change. And you assume, of course, you know, and in the future that it would continue if it continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, Emma grapples with a lot of things that I think most women struggle with. And I think that's another reason why this story hit the right notes for me. I'm in my 40s. I'm struggling with volunteer commitments, my family obligations, all of the things that are happening in my work life. But as she's progressing, we get to imagine a world where she gets to escape these like realities through plot twists. I want to know what was the most gratifying to write. And did you feel like this was like a therapeutic process as a writer to write these scenes? Because who wouldn't want to block the lady that's annoying you for volunteer commitments, right? Like, these are amazing qualities.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, Emma in the book is a parent, but I think women generally, if you're not a mother, you certainly normally take on a caring role in some capacity, be it an elderly relative, or your brother who says, you do it, not me. You know, there's obviously a big pressure on women to be all things to all people. And, oh, she'll do that. She'll pick up that. She'll remember that. She'll, and yeah, that it, the freedom of writing, there are a few days in it, obviously, where she tells the people what she really thinks because there are no consequences. She dumps, exactly. She blocks the groups. She screams at people, which is something you just never do. You know, you can watch it in movies where people throw the water over the face and slap the faces and all of this, but you can't do this in real life. This is not how you can behave. But Emma gets that wonderful glimpse of being able to release in that way. But ultimately, you know, she does learn that really putting out lots of bad energy and you know, is not perhaps the right way to go about her life. But yeah, those were very fun to write. Even just her, I think she emerges downstairs one day, doesn't she, dressed in absolutely like a mad fairy. And she's just going out like it. And I just love the idea of this 40s woman clumping along in boots and a netted skirt and just living her best life in the Ritz and like just buying stuff and throwing it in bins and just not caring at all about the consequences of her day. But yeah, it was fun to write. Yeah, and definitely, yeah, like you say, you sort of envisage, oh, who would I do that to in my life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciated too. There are consequences to day drinking that she can't escape, even though, you know, she's living this like kind of fantastical existence, being able to live without consequences, something that I'm sure we all at times wish that we had. So I just really appreciated those kinds of sequences where you got to go really all out with it. And especially like some of her feedback for other people, or just being honest in the ways that we don't always get the opportunity to do.
Yes, definitely. And obviously you see that a lot with, you know, she faces misogyny a lot at work and all of that. And it was joyful to, like you say, just to picture the people in our life. We all know so many men that we've portrayed in this book. Yeah, that was a very gratifying part of standing up to men that you normally just smile and nod at. And this time Emma tells them exactly what she thinks of them, which, yeah, I enjoyed.
Well, what was the most challenging aspect? Because time travel stories, to me, I feel like this is the hardest kind to keep a reader engaged. Were you ever worried there was going to be a lull, or how do you keep plot moving when you are, you know, repeating sequences the way that you are?
Yeah, it is genuinely very difficult because you're so aware that you cannot just bore the reader by replaying the same facts the same day. And of course, but you also can't break the rules. So everyone has their place. Dan comes home at the same time every day. His life doesn't, you know, change unless she intervenes and changes it. So you can't mess with those kind of timings because obviously it will annoy the reader, rightly so. So it was incredibly, you know, had everyone's day mapped out, literally to the minute. And of course, then, you know, if you dump something in Emma's day, you have to go and check everyone else's day if you want her to do something different. So editing became this enormous task. But I think what I was desperately trying to do was constantly introduce new things, new glimpses of a day. And so you'd remember that, you know, the first fact from the first day, and I'd hint at it and then move on to a new aspect or a new thing that she would notice, and just try to continually keep it pacey. But the main way of doing that was, of course, to drip feed the reader clues. And, you know, you knew that there were things going on with her family. You knew there was, there's something going on with her dog. There's something going on with her son. There's something going on with her daughter. What, you know, why is Dan so grumpy? You know that all these things are being seeded in that I'll answer. And so, yeah, that felt incredibly important to put in those little, you know, facts and red herrings. And again, as I say, coming back to sort of perhaps attacking this as a thriller and a mystery in the way that I plotted it felt really helpful. Because I think if I hadn't seeded in those secrets and seeded in those hints at problems, that perhaps it would have lost its propulsion, I think.
And I think what you're saying to me, a lot of the things that you're doing where you're planting clues and things like that feel very thriller inspired, which is what you had written before. Did you feel like your writing was overlapping a little bit with skill regarding that?
Yeah, so there's no way I could have written this book a few books ago. So this was actually book 13, which is mad. And I'd written sort of romantic comedy. I'd written moving women's fiction. I'd written really big, dark thrillers. And this felt like it was not so much a mixing of genre. It's very much women's fiction, but I hope it has that mystery running through it. So yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that all the plotting that I learned to do with thrillers really helped make a women's fiction book, know, like Rebecca Searle or Rosie Walsh, who do these brilliant books where, you know, they do the same, where they try to create mystery and drama within, you know, a genre that we know can be viewed as predictable. I don't think it is myself, but making sure that you're always surprising the reader in any genre is important, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, we want to talk about what you have loved from time travel books. Were there any books that influenced this book or others that you have enjoyed that you would recommend to another reader?
Well, I mean, I love a time hop novel, and I love, you know, there's so many clever ways that people have played around with time. Two that I think definitely influenced this book in terms of what I wanted to bring to it was, one was In 5 Years by Rebecca Searle. Mm. I just, the surprising nature of that book, and I obviously won't ruin the twist for people that haven't read it, although they must, is it, and the book is basically about Dani. She has a 5-year plan. It's all going very well. She's got her dream job. She's engaged to the perfect man. But then she has a dream that night, and she dreams of a night in 5 years where she's engaged to another man. And she sort of files it away and is like, oh, that was a weird dream. And then 5 years later, she's sort of turning into her street and the man from her dreams is standing there. And it just throws this enormous spanner into her life and things spiral. But it's written, it's so fantastic. And obviously it has an enormous sort of twist in it that I just was floored by. And I just thought it was a brilliant example of a character I was invested in, a story that I was totally intrigued by. And yeah, as I say, just that mystery running through it that just kept me frantically turning the pages, and I cried and cried in that book as well. So that was a fantastic read, and actually One Italian Summer as well from her is great. I'd read anything she writes. Mm-hmm. And then Rowan Coleman, The Summer Impossible Things, I don't know whether you've read that. Mm-mm. She is just so good at romance. Oh my goodness, that love story, I want to reread it just to see how, I mean, you just fall so deeply in love with her heroes, it's ridiculous. But this one is about Luna. She's in her late 20s, and after a devastating event occurs in her life, her mother takes her life. She heads back to New York, where her mother was in her 20s, and there she discovers a time slip, and it takes her back to 1977, where she meets her mother as a young woman who's 20, I think, and she basically realizes that she could perhaps stop her mother, you know, making the same mistakes and maybe change her mother's past. But of course, as the book progresses, you realize that she might change her mother's past, but she might risk her own life doing so. So that had all the qualities that I wanted in this book. You know, the mystery, the stakes are really high. You know, is she going to survive the book? And also just in a brilliant, well-drawn romance where you're just, you know, you're just totally in love by the end.
This is where we take a commercial break and I go and order these books right now. I have to admit, I have read Rebecca Searle. She wrote The Dinner List, if I'm correct. Yes. Is that correct? Okay. Mm-hmm. So I read that and I did not get In 5 Years. I have it on my Kindle, but I have not gotten to it yet. Or One Italian Summer, which everyone has been raving about. So I'm excited to check those out. But that second recommendation that you had, I have never heard of that before. So I'm really, really excited about that because I love time travel.
Good. Well, there's also massive disco in the last one as well. Like the 70s really come to life, which is just an added, you know, joy. But yeah, Rebecca Searle's, yeah, both One Italian Summer and In 5 Years are just, I would highly recommend. She's just great at what she does.
Oh, I love that. Well, I'm glad that you gave us some recommendations. I do want to talk about the fact that you have published 13 novels. So then this is marketed as a US debut. So I want to talk about what that looks like for you as a writer, because you're the first one who's coming into our space that has that rich history of writing, but is being marketed as a debut author here in the US. So what does that look for you on your side of things that is different than what it would look like in the UK? Like, is just brand new altogether?
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a joy. You know, I've been wanting to, you know, sell a book, as it were, into the States for forever. And it's just been so exciting that this was the one, and particularly this book that felt such a personal, I suppose, half cry for help, half look at my own life. It just felt really special that this was the one that got editors sitting up and taking notice. And also, I think I've been really lucky because I look back at my backlist and, you know, not to say, oh, my old books are not good, but I just feel really excited excited that I may be being introduced to a new readership at a stage in my career where I am, you know, I am proud of what I've learned and how far I've come. And I'm really excited about playing with structure. And I love the technique of writing. And I've got, you know, other book ideas. I've got a book idea, obviously, after this and after that. And it's just been such a joy to launch in America as a writer of speculative love stories. And just stay in that genre, because it's just my favorite thing to do is take someone and, you know, mess with time and space, basically. It just makes for such brilliant, fun books to write. And I think it has a lot. I think I was sort of writing to this point. I think I look back at my backlist and think, oh, yeah, you know, there's the comedy from there, and there's the thriller from there, and there's the emotion from those. And really strangely, I think it's led me to this wonderful place where, you know, I feel like a very sort of rounded writer. So no, I'm so excited. It's lovely.
That is wonderful. So is this with a new publishing house as well? Because I know that you have a new name that you're writing under. So this is like all just a brand new project in general.
Exactly. That is all super brand new. Exactly. I've never worked with HarperCollins before, but I was lucky that I'm not only working with them in the US, but I'm also working with them in the UK. So that's been lovely. So they've been doing some edits with me together, and it's really nice. The American and the UK team are really close, and it's just been a joyful experience, really. So yeah, all brand new.
I have to say that you have weaved in quite the literary world for your character. And, you know, some of it feels a little dishy. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I felt like I was peeking behind the curtain a little bit, either as your experience being a writer or just what it might be like to have your work out in the world. How much fun was it to kind of go in those places and share a little peek behind the curtain at your literary world too?
Yes, I've never been more aware, because it's set in publishing, obviously, and it's about a literary agent. And there's also this incredibly needy author who WhatsApps her throughout the entire book, called Author Lou. And every single author friend of mine who's read this book has basically messaged me saying, am I Author Lou? Is that me? And I was like, we're all Author Lou. We're all that mad. But yeah, it was such a pleasure. I actually interviewed 18 literary agents, because I was so worried that people would say, that's him, that's me, that's her, you know. So I tried really hard to get a sort of rounded idea of what it was like in that world. But it was really fun to, you know, poke fun at publishing as well. And just, and like you say, like, it feels a little bit like I'm dishing the dirt of what goes on at publishing houses and agencies and how authors feel, but without, I hope, you know, doing it in a fun and lighthearted way rather than, you know, complaining.
Well, I had to show Cheska when we got on that her book is all tabbed up, because one of the sequences has a like Goodreads reviewer who's like shallowly, like hasn't even read the book and just doesn't like the plot idea. And so like doesn't actually do anything with it. So I was like, I just want to show you, because I was like, maybe this is how Cheska feels about people like doing interviews with her. So I'm like, I want to show you my little tabs in my book that I actually read the whole thing.
You do homework. I know. That's it as well. As you know, you, again, reviews are such a funny area as a writer, because you're so often asked, you know, what it's like to be reviewed. Do you read them? Do you care? You know, and I am someone who, of course you care what people think, but you also do make your peace with the fact that you can't please everybody. And I think it's so exciting to meet someone like yourself who it clearly connected with, and they're the reader, you know, you're the reader that I'm connecting with. You're the reader that I wrote this book for. And I think that's a really lovely thought to stick with, is that, you know, it doesn't matter if, you know, X doesn't, if she hates it, it's okay. She just won't buy your other one.
It's true. Well, I had been walking around the Loop in our neighborhood and telling my husband about it. And I went back into my room and finished it. And I was like, I have to tell you the ending. I won't spoil it for any reader. But my husband came up and he was like, that is the perfect ending. And the way that you ended this, as someone who had many ideas for how this story could have ended, I did audibly gasp out loud at the ending, because it was so satisfying and such a smart twist that I just want you to know that all the way through, I thoroughly loved this book, and it surprised me. And as a seasoned reader, it's really hard to be surprised anymore, unfortunately.
That's so kind of you. And, you know, the ending, which I can't read without crying. I've just loved that ending, and I fought for that ending. And I'm so pleased you found it satisfying, because to me, it was the only end of the book. But like you say, we won't ruin it for other people.
No, we won't. But, you know, going back to the Goodreads reviewing and things like that, what are some good ways that our listeners can show up for people and show up for this book too? I think sometimes it's interesting like landscape to have social media and be able to so publicly talk about and tag authors and, you know, share that feedback in real time. I'm wondering what that looks like for you and what is most helpful or most satisfying as an author.
I mean, that's it. Like, you, it's so amazing when it's quite overwhelming when you get messages that where a book has clearly affected someone. And it can be, you know, it depends what you're writing as well, because obviously sometimes it can be, you know, quite upsetting because people want to share their own experience of something that you've written that perhaps, you know, is quite traumatic or something. So it is a funny line. I mean, I love hearing from people that enjoy the books. I mean, to be fair, I don't think that people should tag people in bad reviews necessarily, because I don't think the author is asked to know, because some authors genuinely avoid them and it does really throw them. I'm not an author like that. You know, I don't mind, as I said, I've made my peace with it. So no, I love things that conversations. So for instance, you know, someone got in touch the other day who'd read this book and she said, oh my goodness, I wrote my own letter to my husband. It was a really sweet idea. So I wrote him my own letter, and that felt just really special that someone had read a book that I'd written and had actually done something in their life to change. That was overwhelming. But I think from an author point of view, you're always hoping people will review positively on Amazon. You're always hoping that basically people will, you know, talk about it to their friends and share the love of it, because it's, you know, it's a really hard landscape out there at the moment to have your book heard over so many books. So it's always those people that really love it that you just want to go on and social media, but also just in their lives. But they don't owe you anything. No one has to do this. It's just always an absolute extra bonus if someone feels that they want to share the love, then, you know, brilliant. And I hope I amplify it. You know, if people get in touch on Instagram or Twitter, I'm really good there, then, you know, I would always try and either retweet or say thank you or, you know, so yeah, if I hope I have. So if anyone's got in touch and says, but she hasn't, then it's probably because I've been hopeless and missed your message.
Well, as we close out, I always like to ask authors what they are most proud of right now, whether it's regarding this project or anything else in your life that you're working on. What are you feeling a lot of pride around? Because I'm proud of you. I can imagine coming into the US and doing your first book here has to feel like a major milestone. And to write such a beautiful story, a love story that I think any reader is going to appreciate. But what are you most proud of right now?
I think the reason this is particularly special is because of when I wrote it and what I had to sacrifice to find the time to do it. And I look now at, you know, my kids who are really invested in it and are, you know, they're asking at the moment, you know, what are you going to do? And I'm like, mommy's going to talk about her book. And It feels really gratifying that they're watching me do something for myself and love my job and find joy in, you know, hobbies and creativity. And so I can't help but feel really excited, you know, when I talk to my kids about it. So I suppose, yeah, that gives me sort of the greatest feeling that just because mommy's abandoned you, look,
they'll be fine. Well, Cheska, will you be going on tour here in the US with this book?
I hope so. I mean, I'm doing some online things and I really hope to get out. I was in New York actually earlier in January, which was joyful. And I met loads of booksellers and it was just so wonderful to be there. But I would love to visit more places, but it's just, you know, getting away. Maybe I'll have to persuade all my children to come, but that'd make it a lot more stressful. But yeah, so I hope to be able to get out there. And obviously the paperback will come as well in a year. So that's really exciting. So yes, watch this space, I think.
Well, as we close out, I have to ask about your signature red lipstick. What color are you wearing so that I can link to it? Because it's gorgeous.
I'm hopeless. I have no idea. I think it's Rimmel. I'm not very good. Yeah.
I love it. Anyway. Well, I thought I'd ask. We needed the scoop, you know, over here.
I'll find out for you and I'll make sure I pop it in the comments underneath.
Okay, perfect.
I love that. Follow my beauty tips. Absolutely.
I love it. Well, what is the best way to connect with you if a reader would like to do so, Cheska?
Yeah, so I definitely, Instagram and Twitter are my horrible go-tos. I try and pretend I'm not on them as much as I am when my editors and things are asking. But yeah, I do like that. So I'm Cheska Major Author, or I'm Cheska Major. So those are the best ways, to be honest. I do sometimes check Facebook, but mainly I love a bit of Instagram and Twitter if they want to chat.
Well, thank you so much for being here. We just want to remind readers that you can grab Maybe Next Time. It's available on store shelves starting on March 7th.
Thank you so much for having me. It was honestly such a pleasure.
Thank you.